Chapter 2. Barony of Oth, Portland Protective Association, Tualatin Valley, Oregon. August 15th, Change Year 24, 2022 AD. The Lord High Chancellor and the Grand Constable of the PPA rode side by side through the harvested field, with their hawks on their wrists and the attendants at a discreet distance behind. A covey of pheasants exploded from the ground ahead of their horses in a cracking flutter of wings. Both the associates were in what Portlander fashion decreed for gentlemen engaged in rural pleasures on a summer's day: turned-down thigh boots with the golden spurs of knighthood on the heels, doe-skin breeches, baggy-sleeved linen shirts beneath long tea-tunics cinched by broad sword-belts of studded and tooled leather, and wraparound sunglasses in gilded frames. Embroidered heraldic shields on their chests showed their arms. Those of Chancellor Conrad Renfrew, also Count of Odell, were sable, a snow-topped mountain argent on vert. It echoed the towering perfect cone of Mount Hood, just visible as a tiny silver spike on the eastern horizon. Baroness Tephane Doth bore sable, a delta or over a V argent. She wore a discreet livery badge at the brow of her hat as well, her own arms quartered with Sandra Arminger's in token of vassalage.
"Your turn,"
the Count of Odell said, nodding towards the pheasants skimming over the ground.
"Thanks, Conrad," Tephane said.
This was one of the five great fields of her manor at Montenor, and the 300 acres of brown, blonde wheat stubble with clover pushing up below provided plenty of cover. The ring of hawthorn hedge and wide-spaced poplars around it were full of good places for nesting, and even conscientious gleaners didn't get all the fallen grain that attracted quarry.
"Three get you five, that cock-pheasant makes it to the hedge," the older noble said.
The big black-gray peregrine on her wrist crouched and baited with a bristle of feathers as she slipped free the hood, and a faint sweet ring from the silver bells on its buet straps as the talons closed and relaxed in anticipation. It knew what the sudden coming of the light meant. Then its mad slit pupil yellow eyes flared dark as they fixed themselves on the prey. She could feel the strength of its grip on her wrist through the thick leather of the glove.
"Done," Tephane replied. "Go for it, Riot Girl."
She tossed the arm up in a quick, throwing arc, and the bird flung itself skyward, soaring upward in a widening gyre with a harsh, "Scree, scree, scree!" The wind of long, graceful wings was cool on her cheek and neck for an instant, in the mild, dry warmth of a Willamette summer's day. The covey's alarm suddenly turned panic-stricken, as the incarnate shadow of deep ancestral fear fell across them. They scattered, spattering away like water popping on a hot griddle. Frenzied, the male pheasant tried to outrace the circling doom rather than going for cover, its long tail feathers streaming as he strove for height.
"Stop taking the air, you idiot," the Count of Odell said sourly. "She's twice as fast as you are."
Tephane watched the dance of life and death in the cloudless blue above, with eyes the color of moonlit glaciers, and smiled with a very slight curve of the lips. It made everything seem more intense for a moment, from the feel of the great muscles moving between her thighs to the smells of equine sweat and oiled leather, sweet crushed clover and dry, dusty earth.
"That's a lovely falcon you've got there,"
Conrad said, following the flight of the peregrine.
"And she's going to cost me some money, damn it. Alaskan?"
She nodded.
"Aleutian."
"Must have cost you," he said.
Trade was sparse from those remote islands, and had to run the gauntlet of Haida pirates and the Queen Charlotte's in the inland passage. Only the most expensive luxury goods could bear the costs.
"Worth it," she replied. "Northern birds always fly better, especially in Yarak."
The association nobles reined in and watched the falcon climb, the bird sitting hooded on Conrad.